Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Ready for a new and exciting career challenge? At DHL Supply Chain, you're part of a team committed to creating innovative solutions for some of the biggest brands in the world. We're recognized as a best place to work, where people are valued, supported, and respected. DHL Supply Chain is hiring for a wide range of salaried operational and functional roles. Previous experience in logistics is welcome, but not required. All opportunities, no boundaries. DHL Supply Chain. Apply today at joindhl.com.
Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
What's up, buds?
Welcome back to Japers and Radio. I'm your host, Greg Young. And today we have a special guest, someone who I think we took at one point, a 10-year hiatus from. And then we invited Tariq El-Bashir to Japers and Radio last year. And I committed to him that we would have him on well before another 10-year dry spot. So I've spoiled it, but today we were welcomed by Washington Capitals beat writer for The Athletic, Tariq El-Bashir. So Tariq, how are you doing?
Greg, I'm doing great, man. I'm glad you guys didn't wait another decade. I'm not sure. I'm getting old, man. You know.
Yeah. I think we both have gray in our beards now. So we gotta do that. So all right. Well, speaking of, I don't know how to transition to this, so I won't. But anyways, the Capitals had a practice today, Tariq, and I am curious. So it seems like lately they've been kind of battling COVID stuff, although the latest news being that Carl Hagelin did not test positive for COVID, but now they still have three players and the goalie coach that are in COVID protocol still. So kind of give us an update on where the Capitals are in re-COVID right now.
You know, it's amazing that this team has dealt with injury. They got through basically the worst part of the pandemic, relatively unscathed. You know, I guess, you know, Kuzi had it twice, and Samsonov had it. But it's kind of interesting that it's kind of caught up to them right now at a point where they're also, you know, depleted by injury as well. They, like you said, they've got three players that are in protocol right now. Now, the Capitals are pretty tight-lipped in terms of symptom, asymptomatic. you know, how people are feeling, that they try to respect the players' privacy. I think we can kind of assume that these, you know, the guys who are in protocol that haven't been on the ice in, you know, 5-6 days, you know, have some version. You know, Lars Eller had it a couple of weeks ago, yeah, you know, back in November. So yeah, they are having a, or looks like they're probably at the tail end maybe of an outbreak that they, you know, I don't think people out there realize how, you know, how much goes into stemming these things and keeping them from becoming disasters like the Islanders had, like, you know, some other teams have had. And, you know, it's, you don't want to speak too soon, but, you know, Jason Service, the head athletic trainer, I think has done a remarkable job of, you know, keeping this from getting any worse. Yeah. And you're right. So they took Sunday off. Then they played Monday, took Tuesday off. Then they actually took Wednesday off just because they didn't want the guys around each other.
Yeah. And Wednesday was unplanned, right? That was kind of a last second decision.
Sunday was unplanned too. Tuesday was planned. So three of the last 4 days before today, they had not practiced. Right. So that was just, you know, giving up practice time to stay safe, or to do the best they can to mitigate any more spread. Carl Hagelin did not practice today because his test did not come back yet. We found out after the fact that he did test negative. You know, the journalist in me goes, "Ooh, the goalie coach just ended up in protocol. What does that mean for the goalies?" You know, like, so that's where my eyes have gone. Yeah. Right now. It's kind of like, yeah, well, let's see what tomorrow morning looks like with regard to the goaltenders.
Yeah, you know, well, I mean, the good thing, of course, is the Capitals are fully vaccinated. I think the team is 100% vaccinated. So
they are.
You know, you would think that, you know, obviously they're breakthrough cases and everything like that. But, you know, you have players that are, for the most part, in relatively good health. So
right. They're, like you said, Greg, they're in great physical condition. I mean, they're pro athletes. They're, you know, the top of the 1%. They are fully vaccinated. So, you know, if Lars Eller is kind of the example, you know, he said his symptoms were pretty mild. We asked Peter Laviolette today about boosters, and he said that players will soon, if not right now, they're going to be eligible to get them through the team. It sounds like they're not being pushed one way or another, but they're being told you're eligible and you can do it, you know, when you're comfortable, when you want to do it. So I'll be curious to see, you know, how many choose to get boosted, and whether, you know, if this is happening around the league, is that going to cut down? Because we've seen a lot of breakthrough cases here over the last month in the NHL. You know, whether that's going to, you know, maybe reduce the caseload, because, you know, you end up with 5-6 guys out, you know, that can have a pretty negative impact on your season.
Okay, and then, so Tariq, speaking of, you know, Capitals and, I guess, injury-related things, the other piece of news breaking from practice today is Evgeny Kuznetsov, who left practice with a lower body injury, and I haven't really seen much from that. I mean, it's interesting because he started at practice, right? So I don't know. Had there been any indication of this? Do we have any kind of idea what happened with Kuzi?
So I was watching practice like everyone else, like the other members of the media, and he was skating through drills. You know, they use both rinks at MedStar, and
yeah,
so he must have left somewhere between shifting from the Arlington rink to the Capitals rink, because by the time I looked back up, I was like, "Hey, where did 92 go?" And yeah, he was out. So look, I don't want to get too far ahead here, but this happens a decent amount during the course of a season. A player feels something that doesn't feel right. He pulls himself out of practice, and the next day he's back and it's not a big deal. I mean, it always bears watching because of, you know, how important he is. But I mean, you know, 3 or 4 days off, then they went hard right away. We'll see. But I didn't get the feeling, Greg, that people are freaked out. Like, people are like, "Oh no, it's torn off the bone." Like, I didn't get any sense of that. I got a sense.
No, and I mean, he was. He played a full game last time they played. Granted, that was a while ago now. But you know, like, I didn't seem to see anything in the game against the Ducks that would indicate any kind of lasting concern about Kuzi or any limitations on his usage.
Nope. You know, everyone has hot spots on their body, and
yes,
you know, Kuzi has had a few little lingering, you know, nagging things this year, and I'd imagine this is probably related to that, and he just needed, needed to be precautionary about it. So now, if he's not out there for the morning skate tomorrow, then you can start looking for the panic button and wondering, you know, because he really is. I mean, yeah, as good as Alex Ovechkin has been, part of the reason Alex Ovechkin has been so good is because he's had Evgeny Kuznetsov feeding him the puck. So I would say no reason to be concerned, but it's something that bears watching.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. And I guess kind of the final injury concern, because, you know, obviously there's Anthony Mantha, who we'll talk about later. And I'm going to pick your brain on a mailbag question that you were asked in The Athletic about that. But I guess Nicklas Backstrom is now in a full contact jersey, right? Do we have any idea when he's going to come back? Because I saw that there have been fans that have said that they will donate their hip to him. I don't know if that would be helpful, but do we kind of have any idea what the status is with Backstrom?
So they've been very cautious about putting expectations out there publicly, because you don't want the player to feel that pressure. You don't want other people to be expecting him to come back, and then, you know, there's a small setback, or they want to be careful. But I can just tell you, having done this for a couple of decades and watched players come back from serious injuries, he's ramping up. Yeah. He has gone from rehab to ramp up. And to me, to my eyes, he looks like he's at 80 to 90%. Like, he's getting there. You know, he's gone from that slow grandpa crossover where he was being very, very careful to now he's slamming on the brakes. Now he's twisting and turning and looking and trying to protect the puck. And, you know, when Kuznetsov left the ice for practice today, Backstrom took his spot in the power play drills. And the power play drills weren't all go. They weren't full go, but they were going 7 or 8 tenths. And he was keeping up. So that was very, you know, I think if you're a fan, you should be optimistic that he felt good enough to jump right into power play one and start going through the motions a little bit there. So, you know, based on what I'm hearing, based on what I'm seeing, I'd say before January 1, okay. I'd say before the turn of the year, he should be back in uniform.
Yeah.
That's been my gut feeling for the last month or so, and I'm going to stick with it.
Okay, well, that makes sense. And I mean, the good, if you're a Capitals, if you're the GM, Brian McCullen, kind of making this, you know, decision and this injury staff, I would imagine, that the fact the Capitals are off to a good start, and the fact that really, you look at kind of the standings, and it's hard to make up ground, and the Capitals are in a really, really good position, I think, to again be a playoff team. So I guess from that standpoint too, why would you even bother trying to rush Nicklas Backstrom back? Because you don't want to have, particularly with this hip thing that's been lingering, you wouldn't want him to have to kind of be in a situation where he's going back and forth from the lineup again.
The big thing about this injury that I've been told all along is that the biggest concern is to have a setback.
Yeah.
So they're being extra careful. Like you said, they've got cushion, you know, I mean, they're at or near the top of the standings. I mean, guys, young players are playing well and getting experience, which is going to hopefully, you know, serve them well if they run into the problems that they ran into late last year. Guys got hurt and they had no one ready to come up. Now,
and we all of a sudden you were nicked out as your 2C after a certain
exactly.
point.
Right. And so, you know, as well as these kids are playing right now, the most important takeaway to me is, well, now they've got insurance in case they get banged up in March again. Yes. They don't have to worry about, you know, who's going to step in or playing a player who's at 60% when you got someone who can step in and produce.
Yeah.
So, you know, even with Kuzi, and like I said, I'm not freaked out. I don't think people around here are freaked out. Everyone's just kind of, you know, going to wait to see how he feels in the morning. Even then, like, if he didn't play, you're not pushing Backstrom, and you've waited 3 months now. There's no reason to start, yeah. Getting impatient now. Just wait till he's ready, wait till he's cleared. And, you know, and then I think you're going to see a ramp up process once he gets back into games too. He's not going to jump in right away and play 18, 19 minutes.
No, I mean, that kind of reminded me a little of when I think it was Orlov that came back from the COVID list last year. You know, they started him on the third pair and kind of ramped him up from there.
Right. And remember, he wasn't quite right. If I remember correctly, he came back out for a little bit because he just didn't feel right for a little bit. So
that's exactly right. Yeah.
Yeah. I can easily see a situation where maybe Backstrom comes back and he doesn't play every single game down right to the playoffs. I mean, he's going to want to, but maybe you give him every fourth game off, or, you know, just, you want to be very, very careful. He's not a, kid anymore.
No. I think one thing, though, that I think we've kind of, or at least I've observed from watching and watching the Capitals kind of handle all of these injuries is, you know, you covered the Washington football team before, and I think it's safe to say that sometimes around injuries, they're not the most consistent and thought out, but it seems like the Capitals kind of have plans with all these things, right? Like, it seems like with Backstrom, at least they had a very set plan and they kind of knew what they wanted to do and everything like that. So it's kind of, I don't know if you've noticed that contrast, but it's something that's kind of interesting to me.
Yes, I actually have noticed that contrast. It starts with Jason Serbus, who is really, really good at his job. He's good at reading players, and he's forceful when he needs to be, and, you know, listens when he needs to, and he's a very good conduit between the players and the actual, like, the doctors. He's just on top of it. I mean, it's a guy who not only takes care of the, you know, 23 players on the roster, he's also the one who has to handle all the COVID protocols and all that stuff too. I mean,
he's a busy man.
Yeah, he's a busy man. He deserves a raise and a new contract. But he's well respected. He's known, you know, he's worked for USA Hockey. I mean, like, he's a pro's pro. And you know, you contrast that with the Washington football team. I mean, even now they're having, you know, issues with their trainers. I mean, like, couple of them just got in trouble, you know, a few months back. Professional franchise versus a franchise that's trying to find its level of professionalism. I think they're making strides under Rivera.
I will say, I feel like we've said that about the Washington football team now for the better part of 20 years. But I mean, you know, it does seem like they at least have mostly normal people in these spots, at least for now.
I totally agree, man.
All right. Well, speaking of things that go behind the scenes a little bit as a fan, I'm going to give myself a C+ for that transition. One of the things I want to ask you about, you wrote a piece recently talking about the Capitals in defense. And it's something that I've noticed too, at least from, you know, both on ice, but also analytically, you look at what the Capitals have done shot suppression wise, and they're consistently among the better teams in hockey. Granted, a slight downturn maybe the last couple of weeks or so. But, you know, I'm curious, like, what did you notice? And what do you think? Laviolette, at least to me, and kind of in your piece, you talk about this, that he has a specific system that seems to lead to better defensive outcomes. And so, you know, do you think there's also just been some growth from year one to year two in Laviolette? And I'm kind of curious with that, and if you could talk about your piece a little too.
So, yeah, I do think there's been some growth. You know, they didn't overhaul the system. They tweaked the system. There's just some very small, subtle changes to things in the D zone. But more than anything, in talking to players and just what I've observed, it's attention to detail and it's guys being committed. You know, watch this team when even when the first line is out there, watch this team when they're in the D zone. You don't have guys leaking out too early and getting way north, you know, getting up near the blue line before that puck is secured. And that's always been something that's bitten this team in the rear. You know, you got the skilled team with a lot of offensive weapons, and you have guys who like to score. And, you know, the easiest way to score is to try to sneak behind the 2D and, you know, maybe get
be in there for breakaway or whatever. Yeah,
exactly. A breakaway, an odd man. But you know what happens when the puck gets fumbled or the forecheck knocks the puck off the D man stick and you're now at the blue line? You're outnumbered, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's just not a pure numbers game from that point.
Someone's open. so you know, it's attention to detail from that point of view. You know, one thing that Laviolette brought to this team was activating the D a little bit more, getting the D to keep pucks alive in the offensive zone. And I felt like last year until the end of the year where they started to tweak this a little more. And again, it's commitment. It's guys actually doing what they're told. Yeah. I feel like when those Ds go down the wall to keep a puck in, a forward
drop. It seems very deliberate when they do. Yes. You know what I mean? Yeah.
It is. But now the forward who's on that side, it's their job to drop back and man the blue line for a moment until they're doing it consistently every single time. It's not, oh, well, you know what? There's no one over there. Maybe if I just follow this D down the wall, I can, you know, get outnumber the guy in the corner. We'll have a, you know, we'll have a good scoring chance. No, it's okay. This Jensen's going down the wall to keep this puck. I have to drop back and be the other guy there, be the other D. So it's, you know, it's little things like that. You know, we haven't talked a lot about personnel, but, and this is the hard thing where analytics don't really, it's hard to use analytics to tell you, like, is there a speed advantage? You know, with some of these older guys who've been out of the lineup, they've picked up speed by putting these younger guys in a little more hunger, a little more, you know, I got to do this to stay in the lineup, a little less freelancing, maybe. Like, that's the part that's hard to nail down, but it'll be obvious when this team starts to get back to full strength. If they start going in the other direction.
Yeah. Hopefully well, you think of like was the Axel Janssen Fjällby, which is a great name, but I kind of feel like that's like or a Protas or a Leeson, even, for instance, guys that kind of, they came in and they had a idea of what they wanted to do.
100%. And they also, you know, when you're 20 years old and you're breaking into the NHL, you do what the coaches tell you to do. You don't go, I know I'm supposed to be over there, but no one will really notice if I start cheating up a little bit over here and maybe try to go get some offense. You know what I mean? Like there's less freelancers, more like I have to do this.
Yes.
And that's the hard, that's the part that analytics can't really nail down. I'm sure the folks who study the tape, you know, in the back rooms, I'm sure they have a good idea of the impact that maybe the youngsters have had versus the veterans. But the commitment to defense and let's, again, it's been small systematic tweaks. It's been a change in mindset, but this team was pretty good defensively last year. So let's not, like, it's not like they went from, you know, terrible to great. They went from good to very good, really.
Yes. Yeah. And you know, it's one of those things that's interesting because there's kind of two different avenues I'm going to suggest we go down in talking about this. But I think the first one that comes to mind to me is, you look at the guys from Hershey that came up and it seems like they were ready to go, you know, in the Capital system pretty much from when they got here. And I think that that's interesting because I know the Capitals and Hershey have had their, I think it's safe to say, ups and downs at times in that relationship. But at least to me, it seems like the Caps have kind of a more coherent idea of what they want Hershey to be doing. And it seems like the guys, they come here and they kind of know exactly the system that they're expected to play in DC.
You know, I think systematically there are a lot of similarities between the way they play down there and the way they play in DC, and that is by design.
Yes.
I think a lot of NHL franchises like their AHL team to play a very similar style, even on special teams. Mm-hmm. So that certainly helps. I think, Greg, what really we're seeing here is when a lot of these guys came up, they'd already been pros for a couple years. You know, they were well done. You know, they weren't coming up straight after being in juniors, and maybe this was, you know, they were just down there for, you know, a cup of coffee in Hershey. And these were, I mean, Axel Janssen Fjällby, he's been a pro for a while.
Yeah, that's,
you
know, true.
Protas has been a pro for a while, especially when you factor in his KHL stint. You know, Leeson, this wasn't his first year. So these guys were overcooked, as the Capitals like to say. And I think that helped a lot too, was these guys weren't coming up with wide eyes and, you know, not a whole lot of experience. They were ready to go because they've played the pro game for a little bit.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting too, because I mean, they, you know, the one guy that they did bring up that was a little wide-eyed, of course, is Hendrix LaPierre, and he didn't stick around. And, you know, I think that he had a couple of eye-raising plays that were exciting, but, you know, I think you could kind of see that development for him still was a little bit away, and that, you know, it made sense to bring him back to Quebec.
Yeah. I mean, you could see things were kind of, you know, not moving in the right direction, towards the end. And you see that a lot with teenagers. I mean, the biggest thing for Hendrix LaPierre is, you know, physical maturity. He's got the skill. He's got better wheels. I think he's got, you know, better wheels than anyone really expected or knew. I mean, everyone knew he was a good skater, but he's actually a very good skater.
Yeah.
He's going to be a good one, I think, just physically. And he's getting stronger. I mean, just look at a grown man, a 28-year-old's forearms, and look at a 19-year-old's forearms, and and you know, tell me who's going to win that face-off in crunch time,
or who's going to win that puck battle down low?
Who's going to win that puck battle down low? Who's going to, you know, when you got one hand on the stick and your stick hits another stick, you know, which direction is that puck? Is that puck going back in or is it coming out? You know, like it's just, the strength is a big thing. And, you know, that's always a concern that the Capitals have. And I know other NHL franchises have about playing young players is, you know, you bring them in at 18 or 19 and then they get drilled in the corner by, you know, a 6'5" defenseman. And now they're out for a couple of weeks and they're not really the same for a couple of weeks after that. And now you're setting back their development because they weren't physically ready. That's always like the big check the box that needs to be checked when a GM is deciding whether to, you know, hang on to a kid or not is he physically ready to deal with the day to day, you know, pounding and punishment you get in this league. And I think, you know, the Capitals kind of knew when they were going to send Hendricks back, and they sent him back when you know, that day came. I mean, it wasn't like they got to the rink one morning and said, "Hey, you know what? It's time to send the kid back." Like, they knew that day.
Yeah, you know? They knew it was what, the 10-game rule or whatever with that. You know, obviously they knew that. You know.
Yeah, and also with a kid like that, you know, what do you play, 6 games? I mean, when you get to the point where you're not playing a lot, he's not going to get better just from practice. It helps, but he needs to get back into game situations. I'll tell you what he did. He pushed himself further up the organizational depth chart for next season. He is going to, you know, he could even end up in Hershey at the end of in the playoffs this year. He's now going to be squarely in the conversation for a role somewhere on this team next year.
Yeah. Well, and I think the other, this seems like as good a time as any to talk about Connor McMichael, because he's been a lot more like physical net front presence-y than I would have thought with him kind of. And I don't know, do you think he's going to stick around? I mean, you mentioned, I think in one of your mailbag pieces that he now has a place in DC. Yeah. His ice time, I think you could say, has kind of fluctuated a little bit, but you wonder if he's not there. He seems to be right almost there. I don't know. What do you think kind of the Caps see in McMichael right now? Where do you think kind of his role is going to be expected to be, particularly when Backstrom comes back?
I'd be surprised if he gets sent back to Hershey. I think he's a full-timer. I think him and Martin Ferravari are going to both be here for the long haul. I mean, Ferravari for sure, but I think McMichael has done enough. And I think they've realized that his best development is going to be here, even as they get more healthy. And it's funny you bring this up, because I asked Peter Laviolette a question in the scrum about an hour ago, and I said, "So what happens to Protas when everyone gets healthy?" And he just smiled and started laughing. He was like, "Did you just say when we get fully healthy? Like, what is that? What are you talking about?"
They haven't been fully healthy, I guess, for like months now, huh?
But you know, when you talk about injuries and you talk about the COVID situations, I think they kind of have a plan that they're not going to have that roster. The roster that was in their head over the offseason, like, they're probably not going to get there this year. And they know that.
Yeah.
I think Ferravari and McMichael stick. I think the person who, you know, that I talked to today in a one-on-one interview, Alexi Protas, I think he's making a pretty strong argument too, because look, even when Backstrom comes off of LTI and his salary goes back on the cap, then they'll just move Mantha onto LTI. And again, they'll have enough money. Salary cap won't be a concern for them this year. It's going to be the limit of 23 players, right?
Yes. Which is easier, because that way it won't be like last year or the years past where they've had to kind of make these little moves because they were right up against the cap the whole time.
Exactly. You know, if you look at the AHL transactions list, you'll see there's been fewer paper transactions this year. Like, they just don't have to send guys down on days off necessarily. Yes.
Which is probably just a good thing for them in general, I would guess, right? Like, you don't, I mean, you know, obviously, you know, people get the reality of an NHL roster, but like, I just think from a human standpoint, that's got to be exhausting for the players that are sent up and down the whole time.
Yeah, it's exhausting for their bank accounts too. I mean, that's between, what, $500 and $4,000, right? I mean, it's a pretty big difference. You know, the PA used to get annoyed by teams that did that, but then once they realized they had to do it for salary cap reasons, and you know, the PA would complain back in the day. I don't feel like they do it as much anymore. With those paper transactions, it's just a reality of capped out teams like the Capitals, right? I mean, you're up against the ceiling, you got a bank space, so you can do something at the deadline. But yeah, I think from a human standpoint, I think players appreciate it. Because they still have to call you and tell you what's going on. You don't have to worry about that anvil over your head as much. You're already under enough pressure, being a prospect up with, with the big club. You don't even have to worry about being sent down and brought back up and sent down, even though they don't physically usually leave town.
No. That's interesting. Well, and, I guess you had mentioned a couple of times that you had talked to Alexi Protas. He's someone who's interesting. Maybe wouldn't say he's the most fluid skater in the history of the world, but he's definitely, I think, found himself a role. But I mean, you mentioned you talked to him. I'm going to guess you're working on something here, but you don't have to tell me. But what have you been finding? What have you noticed about Protas? And I'm kind of curious what you had the chance to chat with him about today.
Yeah, so I just did a straight Q&A with him, and the thing that jumps out to me is number one, he's already married, which is mind blowing.
How old is he?
20, I think 21. he had a really great quote about that. His grasp of English is really, really good. He's got a biting sense of humor. Like, he's like just an affable, nice, humble guy. And it's funny, like, veteran players they're drawn to kids like that, and I think the Capitals are their group of prospects. They're lucky in that way. They don't really have any cocky, arrogant dudes who have to be reined in a little bit. Yeah, they've had some of those in the past. Yes. not with this group.
They don't really have any Matthew Tkachuks or whatever like that.
They don't have any handfuls. And I'll just give you a little teaser here. He's driving one of Alex Ovechkin's cars.
Ooh, I didn't know that.
As kind of a loner. It's a loner car from Ovi, from the big man.
I guess Ovechkin has a few of those, huh?
He's got a few automobiles, and he's letting the kid borrow it for now. He tried to return it, and he was like, nah, you can hang on to it. So,
man, that's got to be nice to be in financially to just be like, no, you can have this car. That's fine.
It's a nice car.
I have eight other cars. Whatever.
It's a really nice one too.
Yeah. Oh man. All right. Well, maybe we'll see a photo or something of that soon. But okay. Real quick. Before we take a break, I want to ask you about. We talked about defense a little bit, and there are a couple of players that it seems like Laviolette has really leaned on in terms of a defensive pair that have really kind of shouldered a lot of responsibility and have done really, really well. And those two players, to me, it seems like are Dmitry Orlov and Nick Jensen. I think they have 75 when they're on the ice at 5v5, the Capitals score 75% of the goals, which is unbelievable. It's the best in the NHL. And it seems like Laviolette really relies on that pair. So I'm kind of curious what you see their role as, and kind of how do you think it's developed, as Laviolette's been the coach?
Well, I think continuity is a big thing for Laviolette and Kevin McCarthy when it comes to the D pairs. They put them together at the start of the year, for opening night. They kind of do some mixing and matching in training camp, and then they try to find guys who just complement each other, whether it's personality, whether it's play style. They're looking for guys who just work well together. And when those two got together in the preseason, like, just something clicked. And they've been given more and more responsibility. Like you said, I mean, what was the game the other night? Anaheim. I mean, I felt like they were out there every other shift.
Yeah.
I was actually watching the defense very carefully because I was actually working on that story that you were alluding to there. And out there in every situation. And you can tell they just have the coach's trust. They trust one another. Individually, I think they're two of the more underrated players on this team. For a while there, I felt like Nick Jensen was on his way out, right? There was a cap.
Yeah, I felt like he was really close at times, being there.
Yeah, there were too many righties. What are they going to do? Is he the guy who's going to pay the price? And as it turns out, it's a good thing they hung on to him because he's easily the most improved player on this team. He's kind of doing now what they thought he was going to do when they, traded for him from the Red Wings and then signed him to that 4-year extension. Orloff, another guy that, you know, I don't say there were trade rumors there, but, you know, you start looking at the cap and you look at guys who might be redundant and you look at the prospects and you're like, okay, maybe that's – and to me, those are two of the most important players on the team right now.
Yeah, I mean, Orlov, that was, he was featured, I think it was Dom's piece about the kind of the best puck moving defenseman. And he was there among kind of some of the best players in the NHL.
The two of them together. I mean, watch them on the breakout, man. I mean, their passes are hard, flat, and on time, in rhythm. Guys don't have to slow down and kick pucks to their, from their skates to their stick. They're just, I mean, they're perfect breakout passes a lot of the time. And Orloff, more and more, you can see the confidence growing. I mean, I know he's been around a long time now, so, you know, it's not like he had a whole lot of growing to do as a player, but look at how many times he leads the rush now. I mean, he's a one-man breakout now, and he's breaking dudes' ankles, getting into the offensive zone, slamming the brakes, and waiting for everyone else to get there, and he's setting up the offense. I mean,
the points have come for him too. You know, it's because of that.
Yeah, so he's really taken a step forward. And, you know, you talk about this team that's missing. You know, they missed Nicklas Backstrom to this point in the season. They've had injuries. They've had COVID. What they've really needed was that first line to be what it has been, and those two, you know, Orloff and Jensen, to be kind of, you know, the reliable defensive pair. I mean, look, Ferravari and Carlson are having a good year too.
Oh yeah.
But when you talk about, you know, the number one pair, it's probably 3 and 9.
Well, and I mean, you look at, I think it was like, last game, it was like, who's getting the matchups against, I mean, because the Ducks really had like one line that was like, you know, really kind of dominant towards the end, who was getting those matchups against Zegras and Milano and go, and it was Orloff.
It was. Yeah. And you know, he plays with the right amount of physicality too. You know, he only throws that hip check, you know, a couple times a month, but if you don't think that's in the back of Zegras' head or Milano's head as they're carrying that puck in with speed on the wing, hey, here comes number 9. He always gets low. I mean, it's a little bit of deterrence there, you know. And the common trait that those two guys have is they both have really good sticks, and they both are really strong skaters. And when you're I'm not just talking straightaway speed. I'm talking about, you know,
kind of shiftiness, right? You know, being able to kind of go laterally into position.
Yes, just great on their edges. So, like, you know, you're talking about a Zegras or a Milano. And, you know, those guys are great on their edges too, but, you know, they know what they're going to do with the puck. The defenseman has to react to what's happening there. And the guys who are the strong skaters are the ones who are able to gap up real quick, you know, make a play on the puck. Oh, he made a great pass under my stick. Now that you can back up and get off that guy and go and make a reaction because you're just a strong skater. And so that's what those two guys bring to the table. And they've been a lot of fun to watch. And I'm not sure the Capitals are where they are if that pair isn't playing as well as it is.
Yeah, agreed. All right. Well, with that, we're going to take a quick break. And on the other side, we are going to engage in some wildly premature trade deadline speculation. So with that, stay tuned. Welcome back to Japers Rick Radio. Still here with Tariq El-Bashir. And I guess, Tariq, I'm kind of curious. You had mentioned, and I got this idea from your piece, so I will happily attribute to it, which is you had a question where someone asked about the idea of possibly putting Anthony Mantha on LTIR and just bringing him back for the playoffs. And you didn't totally dismiss it out of hand, which was interesting to me. But I guess, first off, if we're gonna get into this, Where do you think Anthony Mantha is right now? Like, I get the sense he's still really far away, like months at a time. So do you think there could be a situation where he might actually just be ready playoff time, and that's kind of what the timeline is for him?
Yes, I do. You've followed the Capitals for a long time. I've covered them for a long time. They don't say a whole lot about injuries. They keep those guys out of the room. They keep them out of public view. They come in, they do their rehab, they go home. But from what I'm told, it was a pretty significant injury, like not great. And he's going to be out a long time. And when I pressed people on that, they were like, yeah, you know, think playoff time. And you know, this team has got a really good cap manager, and Brian McClellan is, you know, has shown in the past, he's not afraid to be aggressive at the deadline and to use all the tools that are at his disposal. And I think,
I mean, look at what happened with Brooks Orpik. I think it was a few years ago, right? In terms of flipping that and being able to get a player he wanted at a much lower cap hit.
100%. And I think the Lightning has shown the way. They pushed the boundaries. The NHL let them get away with it. I think other teams are looking at that going, hey, if they can do it, why can't we? I mean, it's not like, you know, they're going to have Mantha, you know, skating off to the side for a month while he's, I mean, it looks like the timelines kind of jibe, right? It looks like he's going to be close to returning around that time, which, you know, it gives them another
I mean, that's tool. $6 million in cap space, right? That all of a sudden that opens up for them.
$5.7 million. And remember, at the deadline, that's enough for a player or two. So, would not surprise me one bit, especially when you kind of look at the big picture here. You know, this was a Capitals team that at the start of the year, no one really knew how it was going to go, right? I mean, are they still contenders? You know, some people were in some corners were already writing them off as, you know what, they had their window. They should be, you know, they should have had two
happy cups, with the cup that they won, right? You know,
exactly. Exactly. And you know, people were saying they were ripe for a decline. I read some articles where people were opining about that. And what we see now is they're still very much in it. They're one of the, I would say, four or five teams that at the 25 game mark look like they might be able to do something special this year, which has to change the way management looks at things too, right? So, you know, if let's say in August, you know, McClellan, and this is just me speculating, you know, is going, you know, we're going to hang on to that number one pick. And, you know, maybe we start kind of retooling here and start building for the field. Well, now you got Ovi playing the way he is. You got Kuzi playing the way he is. You're at or near the top of the standings a quarter way into the season. All right. Well, maybe we got to start thinking about pushing the chips to the middle of the table again.
Maybe all of a sudden I was speculating on Twitter a little bit, the Seattle Kraken, I think, have a number of forwards that might be interesting to the Capitals come deadline time.
Sure. I mean, Arizona's going to be selling, right? I mean,
but I think they need to sell just to be able to pay the arena, right? At this point.
Since we've been on the phone, sitting here talking, I think I saw something say they had paid all of their bills.
Well, that's good.
they've gotten current on their tax liens. So,
well, again, we talk about organizational contrast, right? I mean, is that like conceivable that could ever happen to the Washington Capitals?
No, they actually handle their business on the up and up, and they got an owner who actually has real money, and it's not a thing. I couldn't imagine covering that. It's just not to go off on a tangent here, but it's time to end that experiment.
Sure seems like we're at that point, doesn't it? Yeah, all right. Well, okay. But this has been interesting. So I guess I want to dive into one more thing. And it was something you, I think, had hinted at a couple of times. And I also saw a little in your mailbag, which is, I think I had the Capitals on the bubble. You look at kind of the Japers Ring roundtable. I think we all kind of did. And I would imagine you said somewhere, I think, that your kind of view of this roster has improved a lot. So I guess kind of gut check, where do you think this roster is with your expectations? And if they were to get a player, where would kind of the soft spot be that they could add?
So the external view of the Capitals roster is always, they got 10 dudes over 30. The decline is coming. Father Time's going to catch up to them.
Yeah.
The internal view is they feel like their older players are going to age much more slowly than maybe some. I mean, you never know. You just never know when someone's going to hit, you know, is going to drop off the cliff. But you know, all the models that are out there go, okay, well, Ovi's 36. So here's what other 36-year-olds who played, you know, who performed this way in their 20s, here's where they were at 36. And that's how, but the Capitals, their internal models project Ovechkin and Carlson and Backstrom still being elite players into their 30s. Now, is that a little rose-colored glasses? I don't know. They don't allow their analytics people to speak to the media. So I don't know what they're looking at. Sure. But that's just, you know, to kind of go back, take a step back before I answer your question. They look at all the doom and gloom and go, no, we're still going to be good. And we're going to be good next year too, because our guys aren't going to fall off the cliff the way everyone's expecting them to, because they take care of themselves and because, you know, they have their own reasons. So that's the beginning of my answer. So
yeah,
I feel like my perception has changed because of the way the first line is playing. You know, I it was all eyes on Ovechkin. Is he, you know, he was hurt last year. His production was way down. This team goes as he goes. And for him to come out and do what he's done in this first 25 games.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
It totally changed. And it's not just him, but you know, I would say he was number one. I would say number two for me was Evgeny Kuznetsov. Because look, we saw the difference he made during the Stanley Cup run. We saw the difference that he made at the start of the year after they won the Cup. I mean, he's a top 10 player when he wants to be.
And we also saw the defensive decline when he didn't feel like being that player.
Exactly. And no one really knows. He's a little moody. He's a little flighty. It's kind of hard to pin, but it's clear that he's dialed in, and he's dialed in for the long run. I think people are, you know, pretty excited about that. When I look at this roster, to me, I see question marks in a couple of areas. Number one for me is goaltending. I'm not sold on the two youngsters. I know Samsonov has been lights out lately. I know Vanacek can be good at times. You know, he's had some very good games. I do think that is going to be an area that this team is going to investigate here.
Sure.
As we approach the deadline, there's going to be some good goalies available.
Yeah.
You know, I've thrown out Marc-Andre Fleury.
I saw that. James Reimer is another one that I kind of have my eye on too.
James Reimer, you know, I would prefer Marc-Andre, but at the same time, I mean, you know, this team, they love their ex-Penguins.
I do. You know, that would certainly not give you a shortage of things to cover if Marc-Andre Fleury became a Capital, huh?
it would not. It would not. And you know, more teams are going to drop out of the race here, you know, sure. Around the Olympic break, and we'll have a longer list of players to go through. You know, Jonathan Quick, you know, he's got another year on his deal, but, you know, he's a championship caliber goalie who seems to rediscovered his game. You know, they're going to be optioned, and they're going to have cap space.
Yeah.
And I think they're starting to feel like this could be another opportunity, and we can't let this go by without, you know, giving everyone in the room the tools they need to succeed. And the other spot is I still think you can never score enough. You just can't. You can't have enough.
Kind of depth scoring.
And the Michael Raffel thing, I could see them aim even higher because they're going to have more cap space most likely.
Yeah. Maybe not a shot, and maybe not be shy away from using a, you know, draft pick to kind of make something happen.
So I don't have any inside information on this, but someone sat to me the other day. They were like, do you think maybe like Philip Forsberg, he doesn't get a contract in Nashville. It could just kind of come full circle, and he helps the cap win in a cup. And you know what my answer was? I was like, you know what? Don't count out Vegas either. I bet Philip Forsberg with George McPhee out there, he's probably like the white whale, right? The one that got away, right?
I think I threw out to someone the other day that was that with Philadelphia struggling, they look awful right now. You know who's a UFA at the end of the year? It's actually Claude Giroux.
That's a face-off guy. It's a center. He would step right in and instantly, you know, he'd push someone out of the lineup, but he would, you know, make the team better. I don't know about Phil Kessel. I don't know if that's the type of player they need, but I mean, there are going to be some good players available at the deadline. And depending on what happens with Anthony Mantha, there could be other injuries. It could be other things that pop up, but I think they're going to be well positioned to be aggressive. I'm hopeful. I'm way more hopeful now, Greg, than I was the start of training camp.
Yeah. Well, it's just, I guess the other thing too, it's kind of like we talked about, right? That when you have a lot of injuries and guys come up and look good, all of a sudden, you know, stuff starts opening up in terms of, you know, your expectations and in terms of just the amount of depth that, you know, you're developing. Because I mean, these games that Protas or a Leeson or a Ox, the Janssen Fialbi kid or whatever, like these games that they're getting are going to matter. Right. And they're going to help them come playoff time. If there is a guy that goes down, you can kind of feel a lot more confident with what you have.
Exactly. And you know, the Black Aces this year are not going to be a bunch of dudes we've never heard of. They're going to be, it's going to be guys who played 8, 9, 10, 15 games, you know, this year and produced a little bit. And this is going to be a nice little, you know, ace to have up the sleeve for Laviolette. You know, you go back to that Stanley Cup run, man, there were a lot of guys who got in the lineup and that were needed. I mean, Shane Gersich is one that jumps out to me.
Yeah. One of the prettiest goals against Tampa Bay was scored by Devontae Smith-Pelly and Alex Chiasson. So,
I mean, Nathan Walker got into a game like you need.
He scored. He scored against a huge game against the Penguins.
He did. I mean, you need those guys. And so they're going to have guys who have legit NHL experience, who have already been in the room, already have a comfort level. And, you know, if they're needed, there's going to be no hesitation to throw Brett Leeson back out there or, you know, Alexei Protas. You know, let's say he does get sent back down. I mean, there's going to be no hesitation whatsoever.
Yeah, definitely kind of opens up a lot of avenues. With that, I have a couple of last questions here, and then we'll call it a wrap. But there's been speculation rampant about Tom Wilson being a contender for the Canadian men's Olympic hockey. And it was something that obviously that has generated some discussion. You watch Tom Wilson a lot, and you watch a lot of other kind of players you would be competing with. What do you think Tom Wilson could bring? And do you think that have you heard anything? Do you think he does have a shot to maybe make the roster?
Well, I mean, he's on the list. There's a lot of, you look at that Canadian forward group and you're like, Where does he fit? I mean, there's at right size.
What is he going to do, like displace Barzal or something?
That right side is pretty deep.
Yeah. But
the one thing that keeps me coming back to, maybe, is he does something those other guys don't do, right? I mean, he's a unicorn. He's a different type of player. He brings a physicality and an edge. Do you need that in the Olympics? Maybe not as much, but he's a great penalty killer as well. He has shown that he can play in the diamond on the power play. He just does things that some of those other guys don't. And remember, when you're a GM of an Olympic team, you're not just picking the 23 best players you can find, the 25 best players you can find. You got to find guys who can play different roles.
Yeah.
When they're picking their players, it's not like a fantasy pool where you're just going, oh, he had a bunch of goals. Oh, he's real. Who's going to kill penalties? Who's first over the wall on the PK? Who can bring it physically? Who can be physical against the Czechs? If we're down, like, there's just different things that go into roster building. So I guess that's a long-winded way of saying, I think he's going to make them think hard, but I think at the end he loses out, but we'll see.
It's definitely something to keep an eye on. And I would imagine he would, he seems to be motivated just in general. I think everyone kind of pitches him as the future captain of the Washington Capitals after Ovechkin, but it definitely doesn't hurt to have that kind of motivation to really go out there and show it, huh?
Yeah, and if I could throw one more thing back in there is, you know, he's a player, you know, who is known for his physicality and for his puck retrieval and his ruggedness, but he plays in DC with two of the best players in the world. There can be a lot of really high-end players on that Canadian team. If you want to pair him or put him on a line with two high-end players because he can go get the puck and open some space for them, well, you know, he's got experience. It's on his resume. He's done it.
And he's a better passer than I think he's given credit for, too, in terms of being able to funnel stuff from winning puck battles to guys in prime scoring places.
And he gets around the rink better than I think he gets credit.
He's a great skater. Yeah. All right. Well, it's definitely something to keep an eye on. All right. Well, with that, I have one kind of final fun question for you. So you're around the Washington Capitals a lot. You interview players a lot. One of the things I'm curious about. So the Capitals recently released to promote breast cancer or something, or some kind of cancer promo. They put a lot of their players on Cameo, which I don't know if you're familiar with Cameo, but Cameo
I know what it is. Yeah.
So, all right. Here's what I would ask you. You interview a lot of Capitals players. You kind of get to see their personalities. If you had to give a Cameo, you know, maybe that's not a fair position to put you in, but who would be someone that would be an interesting player, you know, or someone you think would do well on Cameo, kind of having talked to the Washington Capitals a lot?
I'm going to go with my gut here. I'm not going to overthink this. I'm going to be Metzov because he's going to drop 3 F-bombs. He's probably gonna get distracted halfway through it and go off on a tangent about something he was watching on television.
So it's good value, right? You know, you pay for 2 minutes, you might get 10.
And by the end, you're gonna be laughing. You're just gonna be laughing. His personality is it's rare, and it's not like anyone else. You know, there are a lot of hockey robots in the NHL. He is not one of them.
No.
He is a man who says what's on his mind. He does not care if, you know, his quotes about hating day games, or about the bad ice that they're playing on, or about, you know, reporters asking questions that he doesn't like. He just speaks his mind. I think he'd be hilarious. So if I were like putting up money, I think Cousy would be my guy for sure.
Right, okay, I like that. All right. Well, that makes sense. And you know, I guess Ovechkin is probably going to be a little more expensive too. You know, so get the value pick.
Bang for buck, Cousy's the guy.
There
for
you go.
Sure.
There you go. Yeah. All right. Well, there's some analytics for you right there at the end of the show. All right. Well, Tariq, this has been a blast. I want to get you on again soon because it's, you know, I feel like every time we come on, we end up in a lot of interesting kind of different rabbit holes. But where can people find you and your various musings on things?
You can find me on Twitter at Tariq_El-Bashir. And, you know, my work appears on The Athletic. I try to write as much as I can. I'm trying to get away from game coverage, and it's more like featurey and, you know, things kind of filling the holes that maybe aren't filled, you know, by other people.
I've enjoyed that, by the way. I think you've done a wonderful job with that. So,
thanks. Yeah. So I try to keep it diversified. Thank you, Greg. And so I'd love for people to find my written work there. And you know, I do a little stuff on NHL Network and TNT from time to time. So you know, you can find me at The Athletic and hopefully on a television near you.
Yeah, no. That's been good. It's been good. No, I've definitely enjoyed it. Having you kind of on a number of different platforms. I think you always do well kind of no matter where you are, whether it's, and I was gonna say, I'm also grateful to have you back just on the Caps beat in general the last few years. You know, I think it's been interesting to kind of, you know, see you apply your skills at kind of a lot of different avenues, but it's just selfishly as a Washington Capitals fan, I'm really grateful to have you around.
Thank you. Very kind of you, Steve. Thanks, Brad.
All right, absolutely. And if you like the show, please rate, write, subscribe, review. We have a pretty robust fan base at this point. And there's a lot of Washington Capitals podcasts out there now. So I want to try to keep this podcast in a good place. So if you get a chance, please rate or subscribe, review. You can find me at GregY_JR, and you can find the show at Japers Drink Radio. And next week, I think we're going to have a pretty huge guest, which I'm really excited about, but we don't have it totally locked down yet. So with that, have a good day, and we'll talk next week.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
It's okay if you aren't ready for kids right now. It's okay if you don't want to be a mom now or even ever. It's nobody's decision but yours. But do you know what's not okay? Not knowing how effective your birth control is. Talk to your doctor about effective birth control options so you can make an informed decision. Tap to learn more.
If a friend asks how you're doing, and you say,
I'm okay.
When the truth is,
I don't want my problems to burden anyone.
Or you say,
hang in there.
Because
if I ask for help, they'll just think I'm weak.
Then this is your sign to call, text, or chat 988 for free, confidential support, anytime. You don't have to hide how you feel.
Save big money on everything for your next project at Menards. It doesn't matter what job you're up against. Works, cordless power tools, and lawn equipment have the power for you to get the job done faster and easier. The PowerShare 20-volt batteries run longer on a single charge, and they can be used with other Works tools. Check out Menards' entire selection of Works cordless power tools and lawn equipment today on Menards.com. Save big.